Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X network, as well as the Healthcare Now radio network. For this episode, my 247th episode, we have a great, insightful, and first-time guest, Jessica Sweeney Platt with Athena Health. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you so much, Justin. It's great to be here.
You got it. It's great to see you again. We met a few months ago at HIMSS 22 in Orlando, and we'll touch on that here in a moment. But since my audience has not heard your voice before, where'd you grow up, attend college, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, I grew up in the beautiful city of Jackson, Mississippi, and I moved there when I was quite young. You probably will notice I don't have much of a Southern accent, at least that's what people tell me. But it was a great place to grow up. My mother is still there, and I currently live in Birmingham, Alabama, just to be a little closer to her. And then I did my undergraduate work at Yale University up in New Haven, Connecticut.
Beautiful. Where does your passion from healthcare come from?
So my passion for healthcare is a long-standing one, I think. I joined a company called the Advisory Board Company right out of college. I had moved to Washington, D.C. because it was as good a place to be unemployed in as anywhere else. And working for the Advisory Board in those early years of my career, and then again at a later stage in my career, made me realize just how important the investigation of and the transfer of best practice information was for a fully functional and effective healthcare system. So I got the bug early.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I've worked actually a lot with, I think it was Betsy Block with the advisory group. We started an accountable care community of practice back now it's probably 15 years ago. But I worked a lot with the advisory group, always for like a 2 or 3 year period. So a lot of wisdom, strategy. Yeah, great organization.
Yeah, just a lot of really good sort of, you know, wisdom of the crowd. It's a network of executives and a network of organizations that are all really interested in and committed to sharing information. So I also really liked that attribute of it.
Yep. Excellent. So tell us a little bit about your role at Athena, and then also, you know, a little highlight of this research, and we'll certainly dive in. And we touched on that. The reason we're doing the show is because we touched on that great research at HIMSS annual conference, and you recently concluded it. So yeah, a little bit about your role in the research, and we'll kind of dive into some good questions there.
Yeah, and in my humble opinion, I have the best job at Athena Health. I lead a team called Research and Editorial Strategy, and I've essentially taken what I loved most about doing work, doing research in healthcare, and I've brought it to the technology sphere. Because what my work is all about is finding insights in Athena Health data across the Athena Health network, and really making sure that we surface those insights and that we get them out to as broad a cross-section of the industry as we possibly can. We want to make sure that our own customers have access to those insights, but we want to make sure that we are sharing insights with folks who aren't our customers too. And so we do original data science research on Athena One data, but we also do surveys like the one that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. So this, I love the position. I think that there's so much to be gleaned. You guys have obviously a very extensive user base and customer base, and certainly physicians and care providers. And so the research and the intelligence that you guys must have is just extremely valuable for us to learn from, but also for your customer base in general. But I mean, what did you find, I guess, at probably the highest point, the most intriguing from the research that you recently concluded?
Yeah. So just for context, this was a survey that we fielded in the early part of this year. We did this in partnership with Harris Polls. Mm-hmm. And the respondents, I should probably be clear here, the respondents were not only Athena Health customers. So these were physicians, about 743 physicians using a variety of different technology solutions. So just to kind of be clear about that.
Yep.
But I think the thing that really struck me, the thing that really stood out was this connection between kind of the quality and quantity of information and burnout and stress. So one of the things that we asked was sort of the degree of difficulty, if you will, of getting information about your patients. And two-thirds of the respondents said that sending and receiving patient data to another provider within their EHR network, so if they're using the same EHR, about two-thirds of them say that that's actually quite easy. But only about a quarter of them say the same thing about sending information between different EHR systems. So what that said to me is that we've sort of maybe started to make progress on one of the easier aspects of interoperability, which is sharing information across users of the same platform.
Right.
What we're still really struggling with is sharing information across different platforms. We're just not where we need to be as an industry or as a healthcare system yet. And that has real impact. That ability to get the information that you need about your patients is very connected to stress levels, is very connected to feelings of kind of isolation in the practice and to burnout.
Yeah. I mean, just overall, and you guys, it's called the 2022 Physician Sentiment Survey. And, yeah. And specifically, I mean, and I've lived in interoperability for over 20 years now. And I think the level and I read the research, and your research is really, I mean, it's spot on. And even probably wrote, you know, rosier than I actually thought it could be, just from being sometimes at the ground level and seeing the frustration from care providers, certainly physicians, you know, nurses and everybody, you know, downstream, but also patients just trying to get data between institutions. Like, as you mentioned, it is much easier within your own ecosystem. But we try to go outside that ecosystem. There's a lot of, you know, frustration, confusion, and then obviously that leads to significant burnout from all the actors part of that process. And you guys really do glean a lot of that. So I guess a follow-up question, in your expertise, how would you recommend physicians and certainly other care providers navigate, you know, that in general, just kind of that frustration, and then, you know, what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, because I think that if the system isn't set up to do what we've just been talking about, if it's mm-hmm. not set up to truly integrate insights from across different platforms, that is going to be a challenge. And so I guess it may sound overly simplistic, but you know, I would say that as physicians and as the organizations that work with physicians, as they're making technology deployment decisions, having in that decision criteria, you know, having as part of their decision-making process some sort of assessment of how effective those tools are at connecting with other tools. I think that's something that we mm-hmm. don't often see. We talk about cost, we talk about feature function, but I think really holding the vendor community's feet to the fire, as it were, and I say that as someone coming from the vendor community, right. holding our feet to the fire and saying, look, if you can't connect effectively with all of these other tools and all of these other stakeholders, it's not just about hospital to physician office, although that's really, really important. It's about integrating labs. It's about integrating pharmacy information. It's about integrating maybe patient supplied information mm-hmm. into the record in a way that's usable. And I think that's another really important component that we can get to. But it's not enough just to dump all of the information into another system. It has to be integrated as part of the workflow.
Yeah, you mentioned that later on in the report, is just the physicians say, yes, I have access to information from times, but then sometimes I have access to too much information. And then obviously with that comes a lot of liability, and then, you know, confusion, and then obviously leads to more frustration in different levels. But I do want to say I have no affiliation to Athena at all. No investments in Athena, but you guys do have the best API that I've been able to find in the industry. So I do want to applaud Athena for that. And I want to challenge, and I agree, I come from the vendor community as well. I've had a vendor hat for over 27 years now. But how Athena enables interoperability and your APIs, your robust API connections to, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other players and actors in the industry, I do want to openly applaud because you guys enable interoperability. You reinforce it at the community level. You enforce it, you know, at the national level. And so it makes a big difference. And so I completely agree. You have to go into that, that institution, that organization has to look strategically. What do they want to do? And I get how data has flown, you know, in healthcare since 1994 when I started in the industry. I know how it flows, how it gets stopped, how it gets blocked, but organizations have to look, say, hey, what is right for our business model? You know, obviously, but in our part of our business model, data has got to flow. You know, patients have asked and need access to the information. Providers need access to that information. And then people, you know, other actors, as you mentioned, labs and other ones need access to that information. So to really fuel that strategically from the highest levels on down is kind of where it starts. And obviously, I totally agree with holding vendors, you know, feet to the fire. We need to do that at every turn. We're getting better, but we need to encourage that more for sure. So.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's something that has been at the center of certainly Athena Health's corporate DNA from the founding of the company, sort of this idea that there has to be a way. We've done it in so many other sectors of our life that also include really sensitive and really private information like finance. So why can't we do this in healthcare? And we're continuing to try and push on that. But you know, something that you said really, really made me think, because you know, I don't think that the problem that we're wrestling with in healthcare today is really about information flow as much as it is about what do we do with all of that information now that it's flowing. You know, the 21st Century Cures Act has essentially made interoperability table stakes. And I think we're going to start to see both the benefits and the ripple effects of that over the coming months and years. Now the challenge is figuring out, okay, how do we make that data, how do we make that information usable in a way that's not going to require the physician or the care team to have to constantly switch back and forth between different applications, between different tabs. You know, one of the things that we're thinking a lot about is how do we get all of that information integrated so seamlessly into the clinical workflow that it's almost not even visible that it's come from a different place. Now we're not there yet. I don't want to overstate things, but that's kind of our North Star.
Well, even picking up on that a little bit, I do a lot of public speaking and then a lot of research, and I actually had Forrester on my show a couple of months ago, and they just talked about how all these niche products out there are really falling by the wayside, and you have to really have an integrated platform. And these niche products really came out during the COVID era and the COVID times because they're trying to solve one single problem. The problem is those products were not integrated into the care strategy. They were not integrated into the care flow of the physician, of the care providers in general, certainly inside their EHR. So that data is disparate, it's disjointed. You've added a lot of confusion into the care strategy overall of organizations, and you've created a lot of issues. And so now organizations are going back to, hey, I really need a fully integrated platform where data flows throughout. And so, you know, it just brings up kind of that conversation I just had, you know, like I said, not even 6 weeks ago, on how we've got to have products integrated. Data needs to know, it needs to go into certain areas. And I think I agree we're not there yet, but we also, as I advise people all the time, whatever you do, whatever widget you create, you've got to make sure it's integrated into the data flows into the overall platform, into the, that way that there's integrated data. Physicians have access to it. It's not overload, as you guys, again, point out in your survey. You know, just data flowing in does not help a care provider. It doesn't help a patient with, you know, information overload. So you got to make sure it goes in the right place at the right time, and you have access to that information at that, you know, again, appropriate and right time. So, you know, I agree. But also, I just want to make sure I reiterate it, because so many people just work on widgets and creating something, a little niche something, but that's not what healthcare needs anymore. We have a lot of products being created, but they're not integrated, and they're not helping care.
It's a really interesting dynamic to think about. It's interesting to try and think about the balance, because on the one hand, you know, I don't think that there's any one single platform that is ever going to be able to do everything for everyone. You know, there's no sort of one size fits all. This product and this system will work for everybody. But I totally agree with you on, I like to think of it as the appification of healthcare.
Yes.
That fragmented experience is the other end of the spectrum. So I think what the way we tend to think about it is we need to have an open and flexible and extensible platform that can integrate exactly the tools that any given user wants,
yep.
but in a way to your point that doesn't require that you go to 17 different places in order to execute the single workflow that you need to take care of that patient. It all needs to be kind of a single pane of glass, as it were.
You got it. And again, no affiliation with Athena, but you guys offer that, in my opinion, better than anybody else in the marketplace today. I mean, obviously the future holds, but you guys did a great job with your open APIs. So based on your expertise, you know, and I know this is a tough question, and it's kind of the crystal ball and deep expertise, but where should we further focus as an industry to optimize interoperability? And what would you say for us to do?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of places, and this is truly at an industry level. Like, this is sort of stepping outside of my yes. role at Athena Health. But, you know, one of the things that I think about is and this has been a conversation that we've been having, you know, ever since I started in healthcare in the early 90s. But, you know, as we think about the need to shift away from volume-based care, this thing that we have been talking about for decades, yeah. one of the things that stands in the way is alignment of incentives. Again, I'm not saying anything gobsmackingly brilliant by saying that. But specifically, I think the incentives between providers and their patients, you know, as we start to see providers taking on more risk-based contracts,
yes.
contracts with you know, quality incentives and things like that, they're being held accountable for things that need to happen in partnership with patients. And there are all sorts of very real and very legitimate barriers to patients doing what they, quote unquote, need to do in order to be, and I hate this word, but it's the one that everybody uses, in order to be compliant, right? Mm-hmm. So if a physician is being held accountable for the percentage of their diabetic patients who get eye exams, but yet those patients don't have health plans or have health insurance that actually covers those eye exams, or if it falls into the deductible gap, like that's not an aligned system. And so it's going to be, that is one thing that I think it's interoperability in a very loose definition, but mm-hmm. if we want to make all of these different pieces of the system work together, I think figuring out the incentives between patient coverage and physician payment is a huge one. I think it would be awesome, and I don't know how this would work, but you know, if there were incentives that rewarded what I think of as experiential interoperability, right? Like if there were ways of evaluating vendors publicly, you know, public standards around the degree to which information is integrated into a system seamlessly and minimizes the amount of context switching that you have to do. I think that could be really interesting. I'm not
that
a huge fan of increasing government regulations, but I think having some sort of market-based incentive for that kind of work would be really interesting.
Yep. I think that's fascinating. I agree. And it goes back to, this is not a technical issue. This is a strategic issue around interoperability. I mean, we have a lot of the standards, we have a lot of the sticks, but we also, you know, continue to create those carrots, those incentives.
Absolutely.
So completely agree. And for those that may have joined us a little late today, my special guest is Jessica Sweeney Platt with Athena Health. So going back to the survey, your physician sentiment survey, what are the thoughts, you know, your thoughts, this kind of stuck out to me, about 52% of physicians stating that they are not optimistic about the future of the U.S. healthcare system. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Oh gosh, so many thoughts. It made me quite sad, but it also yeah. was not at all a surprise. We've been hearing for many years now that a too high proportion of physicians would not recommend the practice of medicine to their own children.
Right.
I think, you know, the timing of this particular survey did not lend itself to a really, you know, optimistic outlook. We're now entering year three of a global pandemic where we as a healthcare system and as a nation, frankly, have not done a great job at using the tools that we've been given. So, and physicians are on the front line of that, and they're having to pay the price in a very personal way mm-hmm. For some of the decisions that we're making policy-wise and as individuals. So, you know, again, I at a macro level, it doesn't surprise me. I was encouraged by, you know, some of the things that feel a little bit actionable that might help on that front. You know, there was this sense that better connectivity, and I hate to keep bringing it back to this, but I do think it matters a lot, that better connectivity, better information, a more holistic story that these providers can access with a minimum of effort will actually help with that. I think some of this sense of frustration that I hear about from the physicians and the other care providers that I talk to is just that we've been talking about these things for so long and nothing seems to be different. It's still just as hard to get information about my patient from when they were traveling as it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is real, we're about to see kind of an explosion of adoption and an explosion of innovation on that front that's going to make it easier for physicians and care teams to be able to see that information with a minimum of effort. So those are my thoughts for whatever they're worth.
So yeah, no, they're great. And so, and I think further on, and you covered a little bit about this, and I think 40% of my listeners are CEOs and or policymakers on Capitol Hill. So I think the next step would be, you know, do you have any strategies or best practices specifically that you would offer? Just say, hey, almost as a challenge to the industry to say, hey guys, if we work on, you know, these areas, we can really improve physician sentiment. We can, you know, we can really bring a better quality of life to care providers in general, certainly physicians. You know, what would you say there? And I just, you know, one or two best practices or strategies.
Yeah, these are probably going to be relevant more for those who are, you know, in care provider organizations as opposed to the policy and regulatory end of things, which mm-hmm. I will leave to people who are more
my
informed
friend Joe
on that
Ganley.
Than I am.
My friend Joe.
Yeah, exactly. I'll leave that to my friend Joe Ganley. Exactly. But I think that for those who are leading healthcare provider organizations, there are probably three really important things. First of all, and very, very deceptively simple, but mm-hmm. focus on training physicians and care teams on the tools that you have made available to them. And this is something that's really important to do, not just when you adopt a new system, but on an ongoing basis. Yes. And there will be resistance to that because doctors don't want to take time away right. from taking care of patients to go through yet another, you know, technology training class. But what we found is that when that training happens sort of on a yearly or maybe every other year basis, the effectiveness and the efficiency and frankly the satisfaction all go up. And so it's really important that we think of training not just as something that happens when we adopt a new system, but as an ongoing investment that we make in our physician community. I think the second thing I would recommend is focus on creating communities within your care team and your care providers. It's the sense of isolation is a very real thing. And care teams, particularly those that are not coming into the hospital, need that sense of community with their peers. And then finally, publicize what you're doing to address burnout. We see great benefit when providers believe that their organizations are doing something to mitigate burnout. We see lots of great ripple effects from that. So those are three very quick ideas.
Phenomenal. I love it. Training, focus on creating communities, reduce isolation, or the sense of isolation, and then publicize what you're doing to reduce burnout. And a lot of that flows with a few previous guests that I had. I actually had one great physician who just left practicing and is speaking nationally or even globally on physician burnout. And that was actually one of his big best practices was to, you know, really publicize what you're doing. Cause it actually goes back to your point too, is it helps reduce isolation. Hey, you really care. You're really doing something about this. And so it gives everybody hope. And that hope is a huge piece to motivation when we're in the trenches. So fantastic. We have about a minute left. And so, and maybe we'll have to have you back to discuss some more of the great, of this great survey, but I would love to touch on, this is actually something that gets called out in all of my shows and actually now has created its own show. Where do you go to get or be inspired?
Oh gosh, that's such a great question. Where do I go to get and be inspired? Probably one cliche thing and then one maybe not so cliche thing. I whenever I'm outdoors, I'm inspired. Whether it's just walking on the trails near my house that I have, you know, walked on hundreds, if not thousands of times, right. I still sort of am just overwhelmed and awed, even in this, you know, very challenging time that we live in, by the beauty in the simple things that are around us. So I try and get myself outdoors as frequently as I can. Summer in Alabama is challenging for that, but I still try and do it.
Sure.
And then the second place, and this may be completely counterintuitive, but is Twitter. I have curated my Twitter feed so that it's a lot less focused on politics and a lot more focused on cute animal videos.
Yes.
And I cannot recommend cute animal videos on Twitter enough. If you're feeling blue and need a little bit of something purely innocent to make you smile.
I completely agree. It's actually why I got on Instagram, to be honest, is all my animal videos. I've been tying greyhound. I watch a lot of Iggy videos, and it's a great mental escape.
Yeah.
So I could not agree more. Fantastic. Jessica, we are out of time, but thank you so much for joining me on air. And, you know, I appreciate everything you do for our industry. And thank you for joining us again.
It was such a pleasure, Justin. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. And thank you to everyone for joining us today. Please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear more, all my shows are posted on Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and tune in. Also, you can check out some of the new content we just posted on justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Stay safe.